The Mishnah in Sukkah records that the Min HaTorah, the mitzvah of Lulav and Dalad Minim, applies in the Beis HaMikdash all 7 days of Sukkot. Lulav Nitam HaMikdash Kol Shiva Uba Medina, and outside of the Beis HaMikdash, it's only Yom Echad, only the first day of Sukkot. This is the simple reading of the Pasuk, where it reads, Olakacht Malachem Bayam Rishon. Everybody should shake the Dalad Minim on the first day of Sukkot only. And then it continues to say, "Usmachtem lefnei Hashem alkech mishivas yamim." We should rejoice in the presence of the Ribbono shel Olam. Lefnei Hashem alkech means in the Beis Hamikdash all 7 days. How does one rejoice? So the Tanaim had a tradition. Usmachtem is bedalad minim. You should shake the lulav and the dalad minim all 7 days in the Beis Hamikdash. But chutz leBeis Hamikdash, you only shake the lulav on the first day of Yom. Then the Mishnah continues to state. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hizken Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai, Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai was the chief rabbi. Mar has a tradition, Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai was chief rabbi for 40 years. Part of it before the Churban HaBayis and part of it 40 years after the Churban HaBayis. Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai made 9 takanas. Quite a few of the takanas had to do with the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So one of the 9 takanas, almost all the takanas are listed there in a series of Mishnais and Rosh Hashanah and Sukkah. So one of them is Mishachar Beis HaMikdash. So it will no longer be such a mitzvah of shaking the lulav all 7 days. And after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so they were told by the Nevi'im that it would only be in the state of destruction for 70 years and then the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt. So they weren't afraid that the mitzvah of lulav kol shiva would be forgotten, because there would be people who remembered that 70 years ago, when they built the second Beis HaMikdash, the roll time is around. After the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they knew it's going to take more than 70 years to be rebuilt. And it still has not been rebuilt, almost 2,000 years. So Rabbi Yechem Azak made a takana, Shehe lulav nito kol shiva, that we shake the lulav and the esrig all 7 days of Sukkot as a zecha l'migdash. We shouldn't forget that such a mitzvah existed. Because the mitzvah is only midrabbanan, all the 7 days of Sukkot. That's why there's a big machloikis in the Gemara, machloikis Amoraim, where the one recites the bracha. How can you say Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvos Avitzivanu if HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not command us to shake the lulav all 7 days? It's only the Rabbanan. The accepted opinion, the conclusion of the Gemara is that we do say a bracha. We say a bracha when we light Neiros Chanukah, we say a bracha when we read the Megillah, and we say a bracha when we fulfill all the mitzvahs from the Rabbanan. So when we shake the lulav, not only on the first day of Sukkot when it's Menatar, all the remaining days of Sukkot, even though it's only a mitzvah midrabbanan, we still recite a bracha. What exactly does it mean, lulav nital b'migdosh? Which part of the Beis HaMikdash is that? It's only in the Azara? Or is it the whole Harabayis? Or is it more than that? Because the pasuk that it's learned out from says, "Usmachtem lefnei Hashem alokech m'shivas yamin." Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem sometimes means Azara, sometimes means Harabais, and sometimes means all of Yerushalayim. All of Yerushalayim has a lower level of Kedushas Beis HaMikdash. Harabais has a lower level of Beis HaMikdash. There are 10 levels. The Mishnah in the first parak in Kedem lists off Esek Kedushas, saying there are 10 levels of Kedushas Beis HaMikdash. So the most intense level of Kedushas Beis HaMikdash is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then the Heichal has a little lower level than the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then Bein Hu Nevel HaMizbeach, in front of the Mizbeach, has a little lower level than the Hechol, and the rest of the Azara has a lower level than that, and the Harabais has a lower level, and all of Yerushalayim has a lower level of Kedushas Beis HaMikdash. We have different psukim in Chumash and different psukim in Tehillim, where Lefnei Hashem has different meanings. Sometimes it means Azara, sometimes it means the Harabais, sometimes it means all of Yerushalayim. So the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayis quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi that lulav nitol b'migdosh kol shiva the mitzvah men haTorah usmachtem lefnei Hashem alakech m'shivas yomim applies to all of Yerushalayim. The Holy Ratika, there's a mitzvah men haTorah to shake the lulav all the 7 days of Sukkot. So that's why there was a sefer that was written over 100 years ago. Rabbi Yankev Etlinger wrote a sefer. The first sefer that he wrote is called Bikur Yaakov. That was his Reishis Bikur. His name was Yaakov. The first sefer is Bikur Yaakov. Very, very good sefer. He wrote the other Svarim HaGemara that are called Oruch Laner. And he wrote, this is Chuvas Binyan Sion. But the Bikur Yankiv is the first sefer that he wrote. It's very good. It's a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, Hilchas Dalet Minim, Hilchas Sukkah, and the Dinim of the Yantav of Sukkah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes it on every page. He always refers to the Bikur Yankiv. So the Bikur Yankiv lived in Germany. They weren't dreaming of rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash at that time. And he writes a Chiddush. He says that according, if you put together two Rambams, you come up with the following Chiddush. And today, everybody follows his practices, his Chiddush. He came up with the following Chiddush. The Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayos adopted this passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi, that the mitzvah of lulav kol shiva min haTorah applies to the whole Ir Atika. Does the Ir Atika retain the kedusha today after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Or do we say once the Beis HaMikdash is batal, so the whole kedusha is batal? So the Rambam happens to be of the opinion in Hilchas Beis HaBchira that the kedusha HaMikdash is loy batal, and kedusha Yerushalayim is loy batal. The Rambam thinks that from the days that Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, so all of the Harabayis and the Beis Yerushalayim, everything retained the Kedusha. It was never Batla. Kedusha's Beis HaMikdash was never Batla. Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael, that was accomplished by Yeshua ben Nun when Eretz Yisrael was conquered. So that Kedusha was Batla at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon. Then Ezra had to reinstitute the Kedusha when the Jews moved back to Eretz Yisrael from Babel. But the Kedusha's Beis HaMikdash is because of the Ashuas HaShchina. So the Shechina lozozem and kaima, the Shechina remains there. The pasuk says in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Po Eshiv Ki Hi Visiho, Zos Menuchosei Adayad. I'm going to leave my Shechina here forever. So the Rambam is of the opinion that Kedushas HaMikdash was like Batlas. According to the Rambam, the Ir Atika has the full Kedusha that it always had Bizman HaBayis. And according to, if you put together the two Chidushim of the Rambam, in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam doesn't say a word about this, just in Pirush HaMishnayis, he quotes this from the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Holy Ir Atika has a mitzvah and a Torah to shake a lulav. So let's say a person davened in Beit Vegan, or he davened in a plaza hotel, whatever, on Chalamoid Sukkot. So he shakes a lulav, but the shaking of the lulav is only midirabban. Lulav kol shiva zechal amigdash midirabban. Then he goes to visit the Kosel HaMaravi in the afternoon. Once he's there by the Kosel HaMaravi in the Ir Atika, he's mechuyav ben haTorah to shake a lulav. It doesn't help that he shook a lulav in the morning. That was Chutzli Yerushalayim. That was in Jerusalem. That's not Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim means the Ir Atika. So that's the Chiddush that the Rabbi Yankiv came up with.
Should you make an effort to go to the Yol Seder?
Some people have the practice. They see to it that they always go to visit. Every day of Sukkot, they go to visit the Ir Atika in order to have the opportunity to gain another mitzvah and Torah. Others say that, look, this whole Chiddush is flimsy. It's based on the tziruf of two different Rambams. We're not so convinced about the Rambam quoted the Yerushalmi that Kol Shiva is Menatar in the Holy Ir Atika. That's a Chiddush. The other Rambam has also debated the right of this piece with the other Rambam. So others are not so keen about that. But if a person happens to, if he did go to visit his relatives, or he went to the Kosel HaMaravi, went to the big duchening that they have on Chalamoid Sukkot, so then he should really shake a lulav again. Should he say a bracha because now he's b'chuy min haTorah? No. So the Bikur Yankiv thinks it's a suffix. He's mitzarif two Rambams. Each one is questionable. So he just says he should shake the lulav without a bracha. But if it's min haTorah, so it could well be that a lulav hasha'ul wouldn't be acceptable. That just like on the first day when Netilas Lulav is min haTorah, so Einit Shalachem has to belong to you, so too all 7 days, we'll have to speak about this in a few minutes, so too if all 7 days in the Ir Atika is min haTorah, so the Pashtus is that you should need Shalachem. That's a question we'll have to get to. I remember when I was a student here in Yeshiva, so we had a Rebbe who had learned by Rav Elbala Soloveitchik in Europe. So he says at that time nobody was dreaming about a Medina. No one was dreaming about a Beis HaMikdash. No one had any thoughts about going to Eretz Yisrael. So he said, as Rav Elbala Soloveitchik was talking about this din, so one of the students asked the Mishaila, what's going to be the din on the first day of Sukkot? The person davened in Beit Vegan on the first day of Sukkot. There was no Beit Vegan at that time. The person davened in somewhere in Meir Shorim was there already. person davens a Meir Sharm on the first day Sukkis, and he already shook the lulav min ha-Torah. And then he goes to the Ir Atika. He goes to Dav Madikah Islam Aravi. Is he obligated to shake the lulav a second time? But he say, no, the first day is min ha-Torah all over the world. Or should you say, no, that's one mitzvah. But in the Ir Atika, it's an additional mitzvah, even on the first day. Or do you say, no, smachtam alafnei Hashem alakechem doesn't apply on the first day. It means the remaining 6 days of the 7 days. So when they asked this of Rav Elvelo Soloveitchik, he was thinking and thinking, he said, I don't know. It's a good question. There is a sefer written by a balabas, a businessman. Rabbi Yerucham Perlo was a businessman in Europe before the Second World War. Wrote a whole commentary on the sefer HaMitzvos l'Rav Sadigon. He invented the sefer HaMitzvos l'Rav Sadigon. Sadigon wrote a poem, which is supposed to be a piyut that lists off all of the 613 mitzvahs. In the days of the Rishonim and the Gonim, they used to recite azharas. They used to recite piyutim, usually on Shavuos, which contained all the listing, a full listing of all the 613 mitzvahs. Rav Sadigon wrote a poem that's a couple of 2-3 pages long. And this Rabbi Yerucham Perlo printed 3 fat volumes, the size of Bava Basra's, to explain what are the 613 mitzvahs and how did he decide, how did he read the poem and how did he decide that these are the mitzvahs. So he claims at this point that the students asked Rav Elvelo Soloveitchik, he was before Rav Elvelo, he writes that this issue is a machlekes harishanim, whether the mitzvah of lulav nitol b'migdosh kol shiva applies on the first day also or only on the other days. He thinks it's a machlekes harishanim. The Gemara sees a lot of things from the wording of the pasuk ulakachtem lochem. So the Gemara understands the Torah Shebal Peh has additional levels of interpretation, reading things in between the lines in the psukim and the chumash to fill in all of the details of the halachas. So on the word ulakachtem, the Torah Shebal Peh has an additional interpretation that you need a lekicha tamo. What does it mean lekicha tamo? It should be a complete taking. So it has two connotations. Number one, that the dal min amiyakim zeh zeh. If you don't have the lulav hadasim arovis and an esrog, if you don't have all four, so you don't get partial credit. So you may as well not waste your time to take what you do have. The dal min amiyakim zeh zeh. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, as well as the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, developed an interesting theory that whatever things are miyakim zezeh, let's say the dal minim are miyakim zezeh, so the Rambam writes that's an indication that it's one mitzvah. Tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh, the Mishnah says the menachos are not miyakim zezeh. If a person only has a shel yad, he only has a shel rosh, or he has a cast on his arm and he just can't put on a shel yad, so you put on whatever tefillin you're able to put on. So the Rambam understands that that's a clear indication when they're not miyakim zezeh. That's a clear indication that the two distinct mitzvahs. When there are miyakim zezeh, then it's an indication that it's one mitzvah. So the Rambam applies this in a few additional cases, and then there are a couple of passages where the Rambam seems to contradict this rule, so this is a whole literature on this alone. After the Rambam passed away, there was a dayan in Baghdad, Rabbi Daniel HaBavli, who corresponded with the son of the Rambam, Rabbein Avram, mainly on issues with respect to the Sefer HaMitzvahs. So this is one of the issues that he picked on the Rambam, that there are a couple of contradictions in the Rambam's opinion about things that are not me'akim zeh, whether you count them as one mitzvah, two mitzvahs. So Rabbein Avram explained what his father meant to say. So there's one level of understanding in this drasha of the Torah Shebal Peh, ulakachtem, you need a lekicha tamo, that in the sense all dalad minim ameyakim zezeh. Then the Gemara has another understanding, lekicha tama, that if someone cut a section out from the esrog, it's missing a big chunk, or he ripped off a lot of leaves from the arava, or a lot of leaves are missing from the lulav, most of the leaves are missing from the lulav, chaser, so chaser pasels. That's another understanding of lekicha tama. Lekicha tama means that the dalad minim ameyakim zezeh, and each min itself should not be chasem. Then the Gemara understands from the word lakachtem lochem, what do you need the word lochem for? Well, lakachtem creates sort of a kapas tamar. So the Gemara understands shalachem tei, that has to belong to you. If the lulav doesn't belong to you, you borrowed it from someone else, then you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. What do you do if you just can't get a lulav? The Mishnah describes there was a time that the Tanaim had to shuttle back and forth between Yerushalayim and Rome. They had to negotiate with the Roman government. So they were on a boat, and they were with big mazel, they were successful and a lot of money. Big mazel, a lot of money. They paid a fortune of money to buy dalad nina. It was, and there were a whole bunch of Tanaim there on the boat, so they couldn't have dalad nina for each one. So the Mishnah describes the chief rabbi was the wealthiest. He was salaried by the Jewish community. So he had a fortune of money, so he paid for the Dalaminim. And then he gave it to Rabbi Akiva Matanam Naslahakse, who gave it to Rabbi Lozman Azariah Matanam Naslahakse, gave it to Rabbi Yeshua Matanam Naslahakse. Each one gave it to the other. So the Gemara learns that from the Mishnah. You see that even though you need Shalachem on the first day of Yontif, but a Matanam Naslahakse is also considered Shalachem. What exactly is a pre-eight hadar? So the Rambam in the Hakdamah to the Pirush HaMishnayos gives you a whole introduction to all of Torah Shebal Peh. So he writes about the different sections, the different parts of the Torah Shebal Peh. So one of the parts of the Torah Shebal Peh are the Pirushim HaMekubalim L'Moshe Misinai. We have certain traditions that this phrase means this. You have a tradition that Ayin Tachasayin is not to be taken literally. In every language, there are expressions that don't mean the same as, if you look every word up in the dictionary, it should mean an eye for an eye. But this expression, ayin tachasayin, does mean that. It means that you pay money. So that's a pirush hamekubal l'moshe misinai. You have the various phrases in Chumash. So the Rambam says that pre-eitz hadar, that is referring to an esrog, it's not that Tanaim figured it out on their own based on the midrash alternative reshes now. This is the way they saw from their parents, and their parents saw by their parents, and by their parents, all the way back to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they saw that it means an esrog, and a lulav, and hadassim, and arav. There's no two ways about it. So it's not that you can take any good-looking fruit, any appealing fruit, pre-eitz hadar. The word pre-eitz hadar, that phrase, we have a tradition that it refers to esrog. The Gemara gives you proofs that that's what it has to be. But you don't really need, the Rambam said, you don't really need the proofs. This is one of the Pirushim HaMekubalim L'Moshe Misinai. So, that the word pre-eitz hadar, that phrase, that expression refers to an esrog, that's a Pirush HaMekubal L'Moshe Rabbeinu. But the fact that the Pasuk describes it as hadar, pre-eitz hadar, so the Gemara extrapolates from that, that hadar is an adjective that's a description of each one of the dalad ninim. The esrog has to be good looking, whatever that means. Good looking on a man is one definition, good looking on a woman is a different definition. A handsome man and a pretty woman are two different things. So good looking on an esrog is a different thing. Good looking on a lulav is a different thing. Each one has to be hadar. So the rules and regulations, what's considered hadar? So the Gemara in the first daf in Perek Lulav HaGozel, the first two prokim in Masech HaSukkah, there are five prokim in Mishnah HaSukkah. So the first two prokim discuss the construction of the sukkah and the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah. And the third perek deals with all the dinam of dalad minim. So on the first page, the first daf in Lulav HaGozel, in the third perek, the Gemara says regarding the remaining days of sukkahs that there's a difference, that you don't need shalachem, but you do need hadar. Why a compromise? So there's a machlekes tesis in the Ramban, very important machlekes tesis in the Ramban. What is the Gemara talking about? So Taisus says, the Gemara is talking about the other days of Sukkot's Chutz LaMikdash. By us, that it's only Midrabbanan, Zeichel LaMikdash. So since the whole mitzvah is only Zeichel LaMikdash, you don't have to copy exactly everything 100% the way it was in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. Lulav in the Beis HaMikdash was called Shiva. You would need Shalachem, and you would need Hadar, and you need all everything. But Lulav Chutz LaMikdash called Shiva is only Zeichel LaMikdash, so it's good enough if you have Hadar. You don't, chaser is not acceptable. Chaser sometimes would be acceptable the other days of Sukkot. You need hadar, but you don't need shalachem. That's how Tosis writes. Since it's only with the Rabbana, you don't need shalachem. But when you're shaking lulav in the mikdash called Shiva, that's Minatara, then Tosis writes, of course you need shalachem. All the conditions of the pasuk, you need lekichatam and shalachem, the whole works. The Ramban, in his commentary on the bottom of the Rif, Rabbi Nizrahi Halevi, wrote Hasogas on the Rif. But as Rachi Alevi writes, he's only 19 years old, and he knows the Rif is right. The Rif was the accepted Pesach in that generation, like today. The Mishnah Berurah is the accepted Sefer. So on the days of the Ben Rachi Alevi, the Rif was the accepted Pesach, So he says, the Rif is probably right, but I can't hold myself back. I have to present my objections. So he disagrees here and there with the Rif. He has strong arguments. So the Ramban wrote a Sefer Melchemes Hashem to defend the Rif from the Hasagas of the Rabbi Nizrachi Alevi, the author of the Sefer HaMor. Rabbi Nizrachi Alevi learned Becharusa with the Raibit. So the Raibit also wrote Hasagas on the Rif. I don't think he was 19 when he wrote it, but he also wrote Hasagas on the Rif. So the Ramban wrote a Sefer Haschus to defend the Rif from the Hasagas of the Raibit. So the Ramban writes there in the Melchames, the first Melchames in the third Perek in Sukkah, he doesn't agree with Tosfos Pshat anymore. He thinks the Gemara is distinguishing between Shalachem and Hodor on the other days of Sukkot in the Beis HaMikdash. In Lulav Nito Kol Shiva, you don't need Shalachem. Even though it's Menator, you don't need Shalachem. It's not the mitzvah of a Lekachtam Lachem. Lekachtam Lachem is the first day Sukkot in each Shalachem. The mitzvah to shake the Lulav the other days of Sukkot in the Mikdash is based on Usmachtem. If Nei Hashem Lekechem, it's a different mitzvah. Mitzvah Simcha. How are you Misameach? With the Dalad Minim. But it's not a mitzvah of a lekachtem. It's a mitzvah of a smachtem. It's not that a lekachtem applies all 7 days. Lekachtem is only the first day. A smachtem is a different mitzvah. If you have an esrog that's not hadar, by definition, it's not called an esrog. So that's not, you don't have Dalad Minim. But if it is hadar, just that it's not shalachem, shalachem, the Dalad Minim are correct. Shalachem is only a tanai in the mitzvah of a lekachtem. It's not a tanai in the mitzvah of a smachtem. So the Ramban explains why is Hadar part of the definition of the Esrog. So he says because the word Esrog in Aramaic means appealing, attractive, good looking. So he quotes that the Targum Onkelos writes on the Pasuk in Parshas Bereishis that the Eitz Hadas was Nechmad Lamareh. So the Targum Onkelos writes it was the Mirageg Lemechazi. It was very desirous to look at. Nechmad lemare, nechmad chemda means desirous, the mirageg lemechazi. So the word esro comes from the same shorish in Aramaic as the mirageg, desirable. Something good looking is very desirable. Then the Ramban says, when you get married, so you have to give your wife a ksuba. So all of our ksubas are written in Aramaic, half Hebrew, half Aramaic. It's a blend of two languages, rabbinic Hebrew. It's a blend of the Hebrew, it's a third language. There's Hebrew, there's Aramaic, and there's rabbinic Hebrew. The third language. So the text, the standard text that the Ksuba says that the husband is obligating himself to pay his wife Ksuba in the event that he divorces her or in the event that he predeceases her. She'll become an almana or a grusha, so he obligates himself to give a Ksuba. Strictly speaking, there are three qualities of real estate. There's Itis, Beinonis, and Ziburis. And Meikar Adin, the Mishnai say that the Ksuba Sisha, the woman only has the right to collect from Ziburis, the most inferior quality real estate. But if the husband writes in the Ksuba, he's Mishabit himself to let her collect from Itis, okay? If he's Mishabit Itis Otsidis. So that's what we write in all of our Ksubas, the Ramban quotes. We write, we are Mishabit ourselves, Nikol Shvar Arag. Nichsin dikinyon arag is from the same root as the mirageg lemechazim, same as esrog. Esrog means something that's very desirous. That's what it means. Creates hadar. It's good looking. Good looking for a fruit. So it means that when you look at it, it's very desirous. There's one, the Gemara is not sure what type of a tree was the Eitz Hadas. Nobody alive today was there in the Gan Eden, so we don't know what the Eitz Hadas was. So the Gemara has four different Tanoim, have four different guesses. So one Tana thinks that it must have been an Esrog tree, because it says it was Nechmad Lamara, it was very desirous. And the Targum Onkelos writes, the Mirageg Lamechazi, that's what an Esrog means, the Mirageg Lamechazi. On the first day of Yantav, you need Shalachem. Fine. And the rest of the days of Yantav, the rest of the days of Chalamad, you don't need Shalachem. Question, what about the second day Yantav? Yantav Sheni Shal Golias. Yontav Sheni Shal Golios used to be a Sveika de Yoyma. Bismach Kitcho al Pihariya. So Yontav Sheni was observed because either there was a real Sveika de Yoyma or there was a make believe Sveika de Yoyma. But then once they established the Luach in the days of Abai Verove, who lived in Bodol, so their counterpart in Eretz Yisrael was Hillel Sheni. Hillel Sheni was a grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So he instituted the Luach. So you no longer have to have witnesses come and testify that they saw the new moon. We can print out calendars centuries in advance. we know until Mashiach comes, and we'll reinstitute Kiddush Achedus Apriyaria, we know exactly when Yontav is going to fall out, when Rosh Hashanah is going to fall out, and so on. So why, so does it make sense that we still observe Yontav Sheni Shal Golias? So this was a question that was posed from day number one. Hillel Hasheni instituted the Luach, so the Rabbanim in Babel sent a letter to Hillel Hasheni, should we still observe Yontav Sheni? So the letter was sent back, the response was given. The Gemara says in the beginning of Beitza, Sholcho Meitam, they sent a letter from over there to Abai Barava in Babel, they sent a letter to the Rabbanim in Babel, they should still continue to observe Yontav Sheni. So the question is, the Ritva explains on Sukkot, the Ritva on Sukkot is exceptionally good. The Ritva is always cheerful. He has a very pleasant style. He always has something very sharp to say. But on Sukkot, he's always quoted in Shulchan Aruch. So he always has Halacha L'maaseh. It's very relevant. More so than another Masechta. So the Ritva on Sukkot quotes this Machlokes. This is a historical point. When they instituted Yontav Sheni, when they made the Luach Kavua, Hillel Hasheni made the Luach Kavua, and he sent that letter, Sholch Meitam, we should still continue to observe Yontav Sheni. There was a need to institute Yontav Sheni that we shouldn't do Melacha on the second day Yontav. Otherwise, we would treat it as Chalamayit, we would do Melacha. There really wasn't any need to institute Yontav Sheni of Sukkot vis-a-vis shaking the Lulav. Ben Kovakov, from the days of Rabbi Yechaman Zakkai, the second day Hamikdash was destroyed in the year 70. Rabbi Yechaman Zakkai was the chief rabbi, and he and his bezin instituted lulav nito kol shiva all over the world. So the people are going to shake the lulav anyway for the duration of all of Sukkot. So the question is, when Hillel Hasheni instituted the luach kavua, and he sent the letter, we should still observe Yontav Sheni, did he have to institute Yontav Sheni with respect to shaking the lulav that you need shalachem? You're going to shake the lulav anyway. So the Ritva has a machlekes about that. Maybe Yontav Sheni Shal Golias is only instituted vis-a-vis not to do malacha and to lay Kriyas HaTorah at five aliyahs and Haftorah as opposed to Chalamayit. But with respect to shaking lulav, we're going to shake a lulav anyway. So maybe you don't need shalachem. So this is a machlekes. The Shulchan Aruch happens to write explicitly, black and white in the Mechaber, that you do need shalachem on the second day Yontav. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from that sefer Bikurei Yaakov, Rabbi Yankov Etlinger, we mentioned before, and every page in Hilchas Sukkah he quotes from the Bikurei Yaakov. So he quotes that the Balabatim make a mistake. The Olam thinks that you only need shalachem on the first day Yontav, and it's two opinions in the Ritva, but the Shulchan Aruch paskens explicitly that you need shalachem. So he is ma'ira that people should keep that in mind. Shalachem is necessary even on the second day Yontav of Sukkah. There is an issue of Murkov. If you have an Esrig HaMurkov, the Magen Avraham says that it's no good. The earlier Poskim were more concerned about Hadassim Murkov. That was always considered a big problem. What's wrong with Murkov? So they gave different reasons what's wrong with Murkov. It's usually assumed today, the most elementary reason is that it's the wrong min. An Esrig HaMurkov is not an Esrig. It's a different fruit. And Esrig HaMurkov, usually it's not a harkov, it's not a blend between a lemon and an esrog. It's going to be a blend between an esrog and an ilam srak, a tree that doesn't bear any fruits at all. So that's why there are those who think that Esrig HaMurkov is good. What's wrong? It's not a blend with another min. Why should it be possible? But the accepted opinion is that it's not kosher. And the Hadassim HaMurkov also not good. What is the minimum size that an esrog has to be? So the Mishnah has a machlekes hatanaim, Rameh, Rabiud, and Perek Lulav HaGozel, whether the smaller size is kebetz or the smaller size is keegos. We don't have the shaila. We don't. Years ago, they had it. In Russia, under the communists, they had to hide an esrog, they had to save it from one year to the other. So the esrog would shrink up, it would shrivel up, and you would have a shiloh whether the esrog is big enough. Then everybody buys a new esrog every year, so there's not a problem. Rav Moshe Feinstein lived under the communists for a while, until he ran away. So he had to preserve the esrog from year to year. It wasn't possible to get an esrog. So the esrog was going to shrivel up, so he used to preserve the esrog in honey. So it's a shiloh of kavush. The Gemara says if you cook the esrog, it's pasul. It's not kosher for the mitzvah. Then the Gemara says if you soak the esrog in water for 24 hours, kavush, is kimabushal. So it's also possible, just as if you would have cooked it. What if you have something that's kovish and honey? Is that considered kovish kimabushal or not? So the Darkei Tshuva by the Munkacher writes on Yerideya, it depends how thick the honey is. If it's very thick honey, that's not called kovish kimabushal. If it pours very easily, so then it's called kovish. So he preserved his esrig in thick honey. That's all. It was a sweet esrig. Okay.
Can't
you use an esrig
with a certain
specific
background, like the Chabad esrig or something based on the
Hashasha Mukha? That's why different Hasidic groups or different Litvish have traditions. They want to use Dafka this esrig because they knew that their Rebbe used this esrig. So they know that tree is the Nokim Hashash Harkov. So each group has their own traditions. Which one is the Pardes that the Chazanish used? Which is the Pardes that the Alter Rebbe used? Okay, so each group has their own. So the esrig has a minimum size. That's a machlokes hatanaim. Never comes up by us. Our esrig are always big enough. Does the esrig have a maximum size? If it's too big, it's no good. So that's a machlokes hatanaim. In the Mishnah, we pass and has no maximum size. Esrig is the one tree, the Gemara points out, and its effect. Esrig is the one tree. You see, if you leave apples on the tree too long, or you leave oranges or pears on a tree too long, they're just going to start to rot. The esrig on a tree just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, the size of a pumpkin. It doesn't shrivel up. It's dor. The Gemara says it's dor mi'ilana mishana lashana. Creates hador. Hador mi'ilana mishana lashana. You can leave it on a tree, it's going to keep on growing. I remember once I visited one of the Habanim in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Saul Grossman. He's the father of the disco rabbi. So I visited him on Erev Sukkot. He lived in Meir Sharm. So he showed me, he gave him an esrig the size of a pumpkin. He said he never knew what the Mishnah said. So he showed him an esrig that was so big. It was impossible to hold it in one hand. So the Mishnah says, even if you hold the esrig in two hands, it's also good. So you won't be able to switch hands. You won't be able to hold the lulav in one hand, the esrig in the other hand. It's going to be a problem. But strictly speaking, the halacha says that there's no maximum size for the esrig. There is a color. The Gemara says if the esrig is green, it's pasul. Many Hasidim insist, they say it's a heder that the esrig should be green. They'll get a green esrig, they'll pay more money. So the Mishkan is Yankif is a Shilas of Tshuva Sefer that was written by Rabbi Yankel Karlina. Rabbi Yankel Karlina was a Talmud of Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner from the earliest Talmidim in the Valozhiner Yeshiva. Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner was a student of the Vilna Gaon, and he found at that time there were no yeshivas. People would sit and learn on the base medrash. They didn't have official yeshivas with shiur. So he founded the first yeshiva in Lithuania, in Valozhin, in 1801. The yeshiva lasted 91 years, and was closed by the Russian government in 1891, 1892, something like that. So Rabbi Chaim Valozhin, one of his most outstanding students, was Rabbi Yankel Karlina, the author of the Mishkan as Yankel, who was the rabbi in Karlin. Karlin is where the Karlina Hasidim live. Stolen and Karlin are twin cities. They blend into each other. So he had to put up with the Stolen and Hasidim. So he has a lot of tshuvas in his sefer are anti-Hasidim. He doesn't say that they're Hasidim. He just discusses a shayla, what's the din? And he comes out the maskana that they're wrong. So he has a whole tshuva, a famous tshuva, that a green esrig is absolutely possible. The Hasidim insist on spending extra money to get a green esrig because it says so in the Zohar. So he was a big baki in Zohar because when he learned in Valozhin, they all learned Zohar. That was part of the curriculum. They used to learn Zohar. In the later years, when they had Bialik studying in Valozhin, they weren't learning Zohar. They were writing poetry and writing skits. They weren't studying Zohar. But the original plan was to learn Shas and Yerushalmi and Zohar and Midrash, and they learned Kol HaTorah Kula in Valozhin. So he has a whole tshuva. He says that's not what it says in the Zohar. When the Zohar talks about Yorok, the word Yorok, Yorok kikarsi means green. Karsi is a green vegetable. Yorok, not kikarsi, could mean yellow, brown, different shades of yellow and brown. But when the Zohar says you should get an esrog that's yorok, that means a yellow esrog. If it's yorok kikarsi green, the Gemara says the famous that it's possible. So the Gemara gives two reasons why it's possible. So the Gemara suggests at one point because it didn't sufficiently develop yet. It's not ripe enough. So that's what the Poskim say. Okay, but what if it started to turn yellow already? So you see it's on its way to ripen. So that means it did grow on the tree long enough. it's on its way to write them. So the Mishkan of Yaakov holds it's still possible. Even though it started to develop yellow, it's still possible. Because that was only a suggestion in the Gemara. The Mishnah says green is possible. The Gemara suggested maybe because it didn't fully develop yet, but the real reason why it's possible is because it lacks hadar. Hadar for a man is one thing, hadar for a woman is another thing, hadar for an esrog is a different thing. So hadar for an esrog means it can't be green. If it's green, it's ugly looking for an esrog. So it's possible.
It has like dots of green. Is that like if it's still has, otherwise it's mostly yellow and there's a little green here and there. Is that what would?
If it's dark green here and there, then it is a problem. If it's a lighter green that's half yellow, so then it's considered yellow. So shades of green are yellow. The Gemara talks that if a woman becomes a nido or not, if she has dam hayorok. So some misunderstand the Gemara. Dam hayorok means the woman has a green. She has a maradam of green blood. So one professor gave a whole lecture in yeshiva, how is that physically possible? So Soloveitchik was making fun of the professor. He said, that's not what it means, dama yorek. It doesn't say dama yorek kikarsi. Yorek kikarsi is green. Dama yorek means brown or yellow. Women always have different things coming out of that part of the body. There's always moisture coming out. It's always fluid coming out. So most of the time it's brown and yellow. So that's dama yorek. That doesn't count. But yorek alone doesn't mean green. It means... means brown and yellow in different shades. The Gemara talks about the minimum height of the Hadassim Arabis and the Lulav. So we did different versions, and the Gemara said we passed in the Hadassim and Arabis have to have a minimum height of 3 tvachim. This is how you measure a tefa, 1, 2, 3 tvachim. And then the Lulav has to have a minimum height of 4 tvachim, the same 3 tvachim, with an extra tefach above the Hadassim and Aravis to do the Ninua. We assume, the Gemara says, the Gemara says, if I pick up the Dalmidim, even though I didn't shake the Lulav, I didn't do Nanua, he's still Yoytzei. But apparently the requirement to do Ninuim is Alachatchila Derais. That's how the Achrayim point out. Otherwise, how does the Gemara say the shear of the Gova HaLulav is Dalat Tvachim, 3 Tvachim, and an extra tefach kedela nanea. The whole ninua is only with the rabbanon. So you see that ninua is a lachatchila deraisa. It's not miyaked b'diyeved. The halacha requires. This is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch from the Ran on the side of the Rif that he points this out. This way he reads the Gemara. Not only does the lulav have to have a shear of dalat tvachim, has to have gimel tvachim mechuvin keneged the hadasim and arovis plus. An added tefach kedela nanea on top. The lulav. Let's say you have very tall hadassim and aravis that are 5 tvachim tall. And the lulav is only 4 tvachim tall. Usually lulav are taller than that. A midget lulav. So the Ran says if you hold it together in such a way that the hadassim and aravis are so high that the lulav, the shedra of the lulav, the shedra is the hard part before everything spreads out. So you have to hold the lulav with the hadassim in such a way that the shedra of the lulav will protrude a full tefach above the top of the hadassim and aravos. And if you didn't hold it like that, so the Ran says aswar that you're not yotzei, that you didn't do the mitzvah properly. There is a tshuva written by Rashi that's quoted by the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch that you have to have the hadassim and aravos in such a way that the hadassim are higher than the aravos. Very often you have the reverse. The Arabas are taller than the Hadassim. So if you put everything, if everything starts on the table, so you have the Hadassim, Arabas, and the Lulav, everything together, you tie it up, so usually the Arabas will be taller. So Rashi is quoted as having written in the Tshuva that if the Arabas are held higher than the Hadassim, you're not Yotze B'Yevet. It's very difficult. How can it be you're not Yotze B'Yevet? We paskin Lulav Ein Tzorach Eged, as the Machlokes is HaTanoim. What if he didn't tie together the Hadassim and the Aravos and the Lulav? So Rabbi Yehuda holds he not Yotze even B'Yevim. We don't pass him like that. We pass him L'chatchila he should do an Eged, but it's not Me'akid B'Yevim. And then we pass him further, there's a Machlekes Tosfos in the Rambam. The way we pass him Lulav, Ein Tzorach Eged, it doesn't have to be tied up together. Do you at least require that he should pick up all four at the same time, simultaneously? Or is it even good, acceptable, if he picked up one after the other after the other? So Taisa's opinion is you have to hold all four bevasachas. Even though you don't need egg, it doesn't have to be tied together. You have to pick them all up bevasachas, and we don't pass them like that. accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch, like the Rambam writes, that you can pick up one after the other, pick up the Esrog, put it down, pick up the Lulav, put it down, pick up the Hadassah, put it down, and so on. So if you can pick up the Zeh HaZeh, so how can Rashi hold La Halacha that if the Aravos are taller than the Hadassah, we're not Yetzir B'Yevet? We don't understand it, it's a Pella. But that's what Rashi is quoted as having said that. There's a little sefer on Hilchas Dalminim that's called Chaim of Rochel and Mishmer Shalom. The author was a big Pesach in Europe in the early 1900s. He has Haskama from Chaim Soloveitchik and from the Maharsham. And he has all of Hilchas that he wrote a sefer Mishmer Shalom, which is a commentary on the Prima Godim on Yeridei. Years ago, everybody studied Prima Godim. Now people don't even know where the Prima Godim is. They don't know where to look to find the Prima Godim. So years ago, the Prima Godim was, you couldn't pass on a Shaila without the Prima Godim. So this Sefer, Mishmer Sholem, is a running commentary on the Prima Godim on Yeridei. And then he wrote two Svarim that are called Chaim of Rochel and Mishmer Sholem. One is on Hilchas Avelis, has all of Hilchas Avelis alphabetically arranged. The other one is on Hilchas Dalad Minim, all alphabetically arranged. It's fantastic, unbelievable. He has every Mokker and Gemara and Rishonim that he had access to. All of the Svarim now on Hilchas Avelis and all the Svarim now on Dalad Minin, they all rely on what he said. Everybody quotes, sometimes they lift the Chalof Shem Amra, sometimes they're nice enough to give credit, but everybody who writes Svarim now, they all quote, B'yodim or B'lo Yodim, they'll be quoting from this Chaim of Rochel Mishmer Shalom. So he has a lot of Ha'oris from the Maharsham in the Sefer on the Dalad Minin. So he quotes from the Marshama's suggestion, why should it be possible even B'di'evit? The way to remember it, it's quoted in Shulchan, the way to remember is that the Hadassim are the shape of the eyes, and the Aravos are the shape of the lips, and the eyes are higher than the lips. So that's why the Hadassim have to be higher. But that's not the reason why it's possible, because the eyes are higher than the lips. That's not the reason. So why should it be possible? So the Marsham is standing on his head. He had his at his wit's end. He can't understand. Why should it be possible even with Yevit? So he says maybe because in biblical literature, Hadassim represents the tzaddikim. In the newest is Zechariah. In the novel of Zechariah, which Rashi writes on Zechariah, is the most obscure of all of the Nevi'im. If you don't have a tradition of the Torah Shabbat, you don't understand Bechlav what's going on there in the Zechariah. So he has a nevuah that is there are horses galloping through an area where there are hadassim growing. So Rashi quotes from the tradition of the Torah Shabbat Peh, the hadassim represented tzaddikim, and the arabis, according to the Medrash, represent the rishonim, Abraham, Loi Tam, Loi Reah. So he's guessing, he doesn't know. He says maybe the reason why, if you have the arabis higher than the hadassim, then you have the rishonim have a shlita over the tzaddikim. But he says he's only guessing. It's an agadic explanation. Doesn't make any sense. But l'chatchila, one should be choshish for that. That's what Rashi is quoted as having said. You should see to it that the hadassim should, the tip of the hadassim should be slightly above the tip, the top of the arovis, and from above the top of the hadassim, you should have protruding on top a full tefach's worth of the shedra of the lulav, not enough of the lulav. It should be the shedra of the lulav, towards the top tefachim of the lulav. There is no shedra. The spine doesn't go all the way to the top. The Gemara says hadassim have to be mishuloshim. Mishuloshim means that you have all the three or more leaves growing from the same spot. If you have two here and two somewhere else, so that's called a hodo shaita, that's not kosher. What exactly does that expression mean? A hodo shaita means a stupid hodos. That's what some assume. Hodo shaita means a stupid hodos, means it's a fake. It's a fake hodos. Others say no. In biblical Hebrew, the word shota means a twig. That's what, who said that? Rechavam said that. Rechavam lost his whole malchus. Rav ben Nevot took everybody away from Rechavam. Rechavam was the son of Shlomo HaMelech. So Shlomo HaMelech was an intelligent person. He was Chochem Mikol Adam, and his son Rechavam was not so smart. So the pasuk says, Avi, they quote Rechavam, Avi Yisr Eschem Ashoitim, my father beat you up with twigs, Vani Ayaser Eschem Ba'akrabim, I'm gonna cause you to suffer with scorpions. So the word Shota means a twig. So Hada Shota means it's a twig. It's not a kosher Shota. It's not a kosher Hadas. There are two interpretations of that expression, Hada Shota. But the Hadasim have to be Mishulosh. How much of the Hadas has to be Mishulosh? You need three Tvachim. The others has to be three tefachim is 12 agudlin, 12 etzbois. So the din is that if roiv of the hadas and the shulash, that is sufficient. How many hadasim do you have to have? So the Mishnah has a machlokes hatanoim, whether you need three. As a pre-etzar, enough eight tzavos. And one time it says, you add up how many words it says, enough eight tzavos is three words. So that indicates that's a midah shatar nidreshes ben. Sounds like a chsidish shevart or a balaturim or something. So the Tana says, no, that's how we establish that you're supposed to have three hadasim. If you don't have three kosher hadasim, you're not yet to the mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva disagrees and he says, Kishem she'esu gechad, the lulav echad kach hodas echad v'arob achas. It's 1, 1, 1, and 1. The Ramban HaChumash writes that there are three hadasim and two arobas, one esrog, one lulav adds up to 7 and represents something al pi kabbalah of the 7 spheres. Whatever the 7 spheres means, I don't know. So you should keep in mind, Rabbi Akiva was supposed to be a big expert in Kabbalah, and he doesn't believe in this. He says, Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, Rabbi Akiva says 1, 1, 1, and 1. One esrog, one lulav, one hodas, one arob. How do we paskin? Whether you need three hadasim, liikuva, or mikaredin, let's say you only have one hadas that's kosher, the other two hadasim are not kosher. Can you shake the lulav or not? So we paskin, it's a sveka the dina, you should shake the lulav, believe bracha. If you don't even have one kosher hadas, don't waste your time to shake the lulav. You're not accomplishing anything. But if you have one kosher hadas and the other two are not kosher, so that's a machlekes hatanaim. And in Shulchan Aruch, we would paskin that that's a sveka the dina, you should shake believe bracha. The Gemara has a din regarding the lulav. If each one of the leaves is a twin, they're all folded in half. So the Gemara says, if nechleka hatiyomis, that's called the tiyomis, that each one of the strips of the lulav, usually when you want to tie around the lulav, so you rip off one of those leaves and then you split it in half and you use that as the thing to tie around. So the Gemara says, if nechleka hatiyomis, Mishnah says, if nechleka hatiyomis, so the whole lulav is possible. So there's a machlekes harishonim, what does that mean? So the simple interpretation is, if rov of the leaves of the lulav are split, then the whole lulav is possible. That we never had, they never bring such lulavim, so you don't have to worry about that. But then there's another pshat that everybody's machman for. Nechlach tiyomis means when the shedra comes to an end, and then you have the tippy top of the lulav, you have two or three leaves that go all the way up to the top. So if those leaves split, so then the whole lulav is not good, even though the overwhelming majority of the lulavs are not split. So Tosfos writes in one place in Baba Kama, if you're going to be choshish for that, you're going to be machmer for nechleka tiyomis, it'll be hard to find echad min yelav, 1 in 1,000 will be kosher, because that usually is split on top. So that's usually what people look for. They try to check that the top leaves, the top two or three leaves in the lulav should not be split. Gemara says it's normal for the lulav to grow in such a way that it's a hunchback, that the shedra of the lulav is curved over. But if it's curved in the other direction, if it's curved over like this, like a hunchback, this is my shedra, so the shedra is like this. So there are people who are hunchbacks, and that's not called hunchback. What do you call that? Bent over. Okay, person bent over. So if the lulav is bent over like that, the shedra is leaning that direction, that's conscious. If the shedra is leaning the other direction, then it's possible. And if it's leaning to the right or to the left significantly, it'll also be possible. So you got to try to see to it that the lulav should be straight. The Gemara has another din that people a lot of times don't realize, that if the top leaves, they're not split, but they're separated from each other in such a way that you have a V shape on top, that's called Ovid Kehemnik, that's also possible. Even though nothing is ripped, that's the way it grew. The Gemara says if it's Kehemnik, it's not acceptable.
Does it matter, like, after the first day, does it matter the kashrus? Like, if it's good for, like, it's good for the first 2 days, and then, like, no, on the first day, I don't know, you see it's starting to split. Should you stop using the lulav? Like, is it, some people say, no, after the first day, it's not the rice anymore,
The din is that if something is lacking hodor, it's possible all the days of sukkah. It's only a problem of chaser, then it's only possible the first 2 days, and it's not possible the rest. So that's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. If the nechleka tiyomis, if it's split, I think most assume that it's called chaser. So Chasav is kosher the rest of the days of Sukkot. I think there is a minority opinion that that's called a lack of Hadar, in which case it would be possible all of Sukkot. I think the Mishnah Berurah quotes all these Shabbos.
Is there an eitzah of a glue in the top there?
To put glue on, to hold it together. Good idea. Okay. Good idea. The pasuk says, "Arbe nachal darov should grow by a river." So the Gemara learns that from a pasuk that the arabas are kosher even if they don't grow by a river. But some Rishonim say that lachatchili should get arabas that grow by a river. These foolish people who sell their arabas didn't catch on. They can make another $25. They should sell arabas muhudoras that grew by a river. Someone has to tell them. It's a heathen. Everything is with a gimmick. So they should sell. Usually the arabas do not grow by a river. So someone should... get the rovers that are kosher la mahadrin and a mahadrin that it should grow by a river. Why is that considered a heder if it grew by a river? Why is that? So some Rishonim say because it's a heder to fulfill a pasuk according to the pshuta shal mikra, even though the Torah Shabbal Peh says that that's not na'akeh. That's what we do by chalitza. When someone has to perform chalitza, so the pasuk says, v'cholzon na'alo me'al raglo. The Yavama has to take off his shoe from his foot. So the Gemara says, Gemara learns that from a pasuk, even if he doesn't own the shoe, even if we lend him the shoe to put on just for 5 minutes, it's also good. But our practice is, the Gemara says, like our practice is lachatchila, we're makna the shoe to the yavam in order to fulfill a pasuk kipshuto. So what kind of an inyan is that? That's a good question. Why is there a midas chasidus to fulfill a pasuk according to the pshuto shal mikra if the Torah Shabbal Peh says that it's not necessary? The Mishnah describes a practice that used to be in the days of the Tanaim, and people still have the practice today. You want to maintain the freshness of your lulav and the aravis and the hadasim, so you take a bucket of water and you put like your whole flowers in a vase of water so that it will retain the freshness for longer. So the Mishnah describes they used to put on Yom Tov and Achalamai, they would put the lulav with the hadasim and the aravis in a container of water. So the shaila is, let's say, so the Mishnah says, the Shabbos, let's say you have flowers in a vase, and you took the flowers out. So the Shabbos machzirin, you're allowed to put the flowers back into the same vase of water. The yontav masifin, a yontav, you're allowed to put it back into the same bucket of water. You're allowed to add on a little bit more water. B'chalamoyed machlifin, chalamoyed, you're allowed to change the water. Let's say on Shabbos a Yontav though, if someone gives me a lulav, and I decide someone gives me flowers, and I want to fill up a bucket of water, put it in, you're not allowed to do that. You're only allowed to put it back into the bucket that it was in originally before Shabbos began or before Yontav began. Chalamoyed, you're allowed to put it into a container of water. So the shaila is on Shabbos. I put my lulav. I finish davening on Erev Shabbos. Let's say the second day Yontav. Yontav is Thursday and Friday. So I'll finish davening on Friday morning, whatever, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I'll come home, I put my lulav, my hadas, my rabbis, in a bucket of water. Then I'm not going to take it out for almost 2 days. I'm not going to take it out till Sunday morning. Shabbos is going to stay there. So the bottom of the lulav and the hadas, my rabbis, the bottom 4 inches are submerged under the water for more than 24 hours. So that's called kavush. Is there a din of kavush kemilushal that passes the lulav on that? So this is a discussion in the Pischei Tshuva and Hilchas Basa B'Cholov. They discovered a Ramban. The Ramban takes a stand on it, but there are two readings in the Ramban whether he says yes or no. Many Achranim say it just doesn't make sense. Kavush is on food. Kavush Kemavusha was if you put an esrog, you say Kavush Kemavusha. You take a piece of wood, you take a twig, you take a branch. A lulav and hadas manarav is a twigs, branches of wood. So it doesn't make sense. You're soaking in water from today till next year. What do you mean, kavish kemavush? So most argue that it doesn't pose a problem. But that's the shaila. All the chassidim, all the people who put their lulav, hadas manarav, in a bucket of water. So if you're going to say kavish kemavush, the bottom 3 inches are puzzle. So you have to figure out, do you have a hechsher? Usually the hadasim and narav is are not so tall that you can discount the bottom 3 inches. If you discount the bottom 3 inches, they're not tall enough that they should be kosher. We mentioned there is a machlokes hatanoim, whether lulav tzarecheg or lulav ein tzarecheg. Rav Yehuda's opinion is that you're only yotze if the lulav, hadasim, and arabas are tied up together. You do not have to tie up the esrog, even according to Rav Yehuda. There's a tesis, but tesis is tied up the esrog. That's a misprint. And tesis, the fevsh, you don't have to tie up the esrog. And we pass in lechatchila lulav tzarecheg because of zekelim yandei or tzehida mitzvah. But for the Yebed, it's not Miyakim. According to Rabbi Yudah, the Lulav Tzarech Eged, so the Gemara is beferish, the Eged has to be a Kesha Shal Kayoma. If you just wrap something around, you tuck it in, and you didn't make a Kesha Shal Kayoma, Rabbi Yudah would say that you were not Yertze. The question is, but we don't pass like Rabbi Yudah. We hold you only need Eged Lachatchila because of his Akelu Yanveyu. So for our version of Eged, only because Lachatchila is Akelu Yanveyu, no Ye Mitzvah, does it have to be a kesher shel kayama? So Rashi says yes. Rashi and Sukkah points out on the Gemara, yes. Lechatchila you're only yotze if you have a kesher shel kayama. So usually it's a problem because usually people do not tie a kesher shel kayama. People wrap around one of the lulav strips. They wrap around and they tuck it in a few times. So that's not a kesher shel kayama. So the Mishnah Berurah says no, but they put this keshikol. They put this little container that's woven from lulav parts. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from an exotic sefer that woven piece is considered like a kesher shel kayama because it's woven and it's tied and has knots in it, so that's considered kesher shel kayama. But the problem is this woven container, this keshikol, the kesher was made before I put the lulav in, so that should really be considered tasav lamin ha'asui. So if the din would have been like Rabbi Yehuda, if we would have accepted Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that lulav tzarech eged leikuva, if you don't have an eged, you're not yotzei, so then the Gemara says that there may be a problem, should be a problem of tasa v'lai menasim. Because the reason why lulav tzarech eged, if you don't learn the Gemara, you'll guess wrong. People that don't know the Gemara think the reason why Rabbi Yehuda holds lulav tzarech eged, because if you didn't tie it together, it's not mitzuref yachad. It's beferish and gemara, that's not the reason why. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that just like you need asiya on a get, if the get grows on a tree, it's no good. The get has to be written l'shma. So if a Torah has to be written l'shma, a sukkah, you need tasa v'lai menasa, you need asiya on a sukkah. The sukkah, if the trees fell down and they just naturally make a sukkah, it's no good. You have to have asiya. Chag asukas tasa l'cha. So Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the lulav, hadasim, and arabas have to be manufactured by people. How can you manufacture lulav and hadasim and arabas? It grows on a tree. It's a natural growth. Rabbi Yehuda says, by your tying it, it's considered you did the asiya. So that's why the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that asiya has to be done. Tasiv, alayim, and asui. You have to have first the lulav, hadasim, and arabas, then you have to tie a knot around it, a kesher shel kayama. If the knot is tied already, then I slip in the lulav and hadasim arabas, I never did an asiya. Has to be tasav lemonos. But the shaila is, we don't pass like Rabbi Yehuda. We pass in that only lulav tzarech eged lachatchila because of noyei mitzvah zekele v'anveyu. So Rashi in Sukkah writes true that lachatchila we require kesher shel kayama for the zekele v'anveyu. But would Rashi say also that lachatchila you should have asiya tasav lemonos? So most of the poskim say no. Most of the poskim say that tasav lemon asa is only a problem according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's not a problem according to the Chacham. And some, Rav Soloveitchik had the chumr, so he never used to use this keshikol because he thought that would pose a problem of tasav lemon asa, and you're not yotzei lechatchila, the lechatchila of lulav tzarech eged. Here in the neighborhood, the Bnei Akiva, for many years, used to sell the lovim, so they had the boys and girls, each one had a different job. So one of the girls, whose brother learned here in yeshiva, her mother used to come every Sunday to the Kollel Yom Rishon, to Midrash Yom Rishon. So one of the girls, it was her job to tie up the lulav. She used an expert tying the lulav. So this poses a problem, because there's a Gemara in Gittin, where the Gemara says that a woman cannot write a Sefer Torah. So the Rabbeinu Tam is quoted in Tosfos Anat Daf in Gitman Daf Memhei Amud Beis as saying the reason why a woman can't write a Sefer Torah is because in Chumash it says Ukshatim Lo Sal and Kriyashman says Ukshatim Lo Sal Yadecha Ukshatim Al Mezuzas Beisecha B'Sharecha. That's in Chumash Dvarim. In Chumash Dvarim we dash in Smuchim. not only if you have two dinim written in the same pasuk that you assume that there's a connection, that's called the Ekesh. If you have two dinim and two adjacent psukim, that's smuchim, also we assume that there's a connection. So it says one pasuk next to the other. You should tie the tefillin. You should tie the tefillin on your arm. You should tighten the tefillin. The same hand that ties the tefillin can write the mezuzah. So women are not mechuyev to tie tefillin. So woman is not kosher for writing a sefer Torah. So the Rabbin and Tam says, from this Gemara you see that women cannot tie the eged of the lulav because women are not mechuyev in the mitzvah of a lulav. Taisa disagrees with the Rabbin and Tam. Taisa says, no, you need a pasuk over here. There is no pasuk by the lulav. So that's a question. How did the Rabbin and Tam derive this from the Gemara? But this Rabbeinu Tam is quoted, the Magen Avraham quotes this Rabbeinu Tam. So that's the question, did we really paskin like that? That a woman can't tie up the eged? Rabbeinu Tam probably said it within Rabbi Yudah's Shita. If you hold the lulav tzarech eged, that you need asiya and tasuv lamanasa is no good, so a woman is not mechuyev in the mitzvah of dalaminim, so a woman would not be kosher for tying up the eged. But we don't paskin like Rabbi Yudah, we paskin the eged is only lechatchila. So true, lechatchila, we insist on a kesher shel kayama. Rashi carries that over from Rabbi Yudah Shita. But to insist that tasav leman also, most of the poskim say not so. And to say that a woman is possible for doing the asiyah, the pashta says that it is okay. The Gemara mentions that when you hold the lulav, hadasim, and aravis in one hand, the asug in the other hand, which way should you hold it? So the Gemara says, well, the lulav, hadasim, aravis are tied up together. You have three quarters of the mitzvah. The esrog is one quarter. So if you're a righty, so the Gemara says you hold the lulav in the right hand because that has three quarters in the mitzvah. You hold the esrog in the left hand. What if the Gemara explains you should hold the lulav in the right hand. What if a person is a lefty? So that's a machloikis in Shulchan Aruch. He say he's a lefty, so he should hold the lulav in his left hand. And the esrog in the right hand. Or do you say no? The Gemara says the lulav should be in the right hand because you have three quarters of the mitzvah. Even if you're a lefty, it doesn't make a difference. So that's a machlokes in Shulchan Aruch. How important is this machlokes? How serious is this machlokes? So the Rabbeinu Chananel holds that this is li'ikuvah. If a person is a righty, he holds the lulav in the left hand and the esrog in the right hand, he's not yotzei b'dieved. So this machlokes in Shulchan Aruch became very serious for the lefties. Are they supposed to hold the lulav in the left hand or the right hand? So that's why the Shulchan Aruch, that's why in Shulchan Aruch they recommend he should bench esrig with the lulav in the left hand, because he's a lefty and the esrig in the right hand. And after he shakes in all the directions, then he should switch hands and start shaking all over again, because it could be that he wasn't the yotzei the first time. The lefties are going to have problems throughout the life. So the problems begin already from sukkahs, from lulav. The Gemara says you should hold the lulav in the right hand and the esrog in the left hand. And where do you hold the siddur? In the third hand. On the one hand and on the other hand and on the other hand. Yeah, so where's the other? So people usually hold the lulav and the esrog in one hand and siddur in the other hand. So the Magen Avraham quotes from the Bisur, so we quoted one of the Rishayim, you're not yotzei. The Gemara says you have to hold them in two hands. The lulav has to be in the right hand, the esrog has to be in the left hand. You hold the lulav and the esrog in the same hand. You're not yotzei b'diyev. So lechatchila, we're choshish for that.
Only when you shake it. When you're going to do Hoshanas, you hold it in one hand, or only when you shake it?
When you go with Hoshanas, more correct is you should hold the lulav in one hand, the esrog in the other hand. So in Europe, there wasn't such a problem because they only had one lulav and esrog for the whole community. So the chazan was the only one who was carrying lulav and esrog. So in some communities, they would have someone walk with the siddur backwards in front of the chazan. So the chazan held the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the left hand. In America years ago also, every shul only had one, 50 years ago, every shul only had one lulav and esrog. In recent years, people became more interested in spending money. People have more money to spend. And people became more interested in spending money on mitzvah. So you come to a shul, you have 60 people, 100 people. Have lulav in an esrog. So that's why they have these little cards you can hold in between your fingers. So you can hold the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the left hand, and you can hold the hoshainas in a card. But lechatchila should try to do that. Lechatchila one should try to hold the lulav and esrog in two different hands, even when you have the hoshainas. We mentioned earlier that ninua is a lechatchila deraisa, but the Gemara says, me'akbe nafikbe. If you just picked it up, you picked up the dalmin, you didn't shake it at all, you yotze. What exactly is the lechatchila? What does ninua mean? So in the Rishonim, you have two versions of what Nidua is. Whether Ninua Taisus has this from the Rishonim, Ninua represents as if all the trees are bowing down to God. All of nature is bowing down to God. Or all of nature is dancing. All of nature is rejoicing. Or the farmer is rejoicing with the produce. So if Nino means that the trees are bowing down, so it means you bend the lulav in all the four directions, all the six directions, north, east, south, west, up and down. And if it means all of nature is rejoicing, or ziranu kalatza yar, then you're supposed to shake it up and down. So our meaning is that we do both. That we wave it in one direction, then we shake it. Then we wave it back and we shake it. Many Gedolim had the meaning, they only waved in all the directions. They didn't bother to shake it all. But the common practice today is that people do both. They want to satisfy their both opinions, so they both shake it and they wave it. In their Heitev, in the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, they quote that the Arizal had a practice to bench Esrig in the Sukkah. So what's the Kabbalistic intent over here? So people give a whole pshat that the Sukkah represents Golos and the Dalamina represent Eretz Yisrael, a connection, that all of history was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not an accident, everything from the Rabban Shalom. So you have by a lot of Hasidim, they'll daven in Shul, so they'll daven Shachris, and after the Chazaras HaShatz, everybody has to bench Esrig on the Rebbe's Esrig, like Baba, like that. But the Rebbe has to bench Esrig in the Sukkah. So the Rebbe goes to the Sukkah, he benches Esrig, and then there's a pause, an hour and a half. And every chassid, all the 1,001 chassidim, everyone goes into the sukkah. The Rebbe gives him his lulav and matam and aslasa, they all bench esrig. Then they come back an hour and a half later, they didn't say kaddish diskabu yet. They finished mon esrig. There's a pause for an hour and a half, then they come back and they're going to say halal and shul. So the Mishnah Berurah thinks that that's an error. Mishnah Berurah was obviously a misnagid. So he says he doesn't know what deep kavanas there are. He thinks that Arizal simply meant you're sleeping in the sukkah. So the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning, wash negel vasim and bench esrig. Of course you bench esrig in the sukkah. You wake up in the morning. You don't wait. The misnagdim, the cold misnagdim, they wait to bench esrig right before halal. Why? Because they're machmir. The question is, the ninuim in the middle of halal, is that a separate mitzvah? Ninuim and halal, that's part of halal? Or is that part of the mitzvah of ninuim of the mitzvah of dalad min? So those who think seems to be a machlokes rishonim. So those who think that the ninuim in the middle of halal are a chelik of the mitzvah of esrog, so if you bench esrog in the morning, then you put it down, then you pick it up again. Once you put it down, it's no longer the mitzvah of esrog. So you're not gaining anything. You can argue, but that's what they think. You're not gaining anything by shaking your lulav in the middle of halal if you put it down in between. So that's why a lot of the yeshivish and misnagdim will be insistent on shaking the esrog, saying the bracha on the esrog and the lulav immediately before halal, and not putting it down until after they finish all the ninuim and the halal. But the Mishnah Berurah never dreamt of such an idea. So he says, Pasha Pshat, the guy wakes up in the morning, he's sleeping in the sukkah, religious Jew sleeps in the sukkah. First thing he does, in the crack of dawn, he benches esrog in the sukkah, of course. It doesn't mean in between shachris and halal, everybody walks out into the sukkah for an hour and a half to bench esrog in the sukkah. He doesn't think that that's what it means. Normally, a bracha has to be cited, kol ha-mitzvahs kulam mevarach aleihem oivel asiyosam, immediately before performing the mitzvah. Shouldn't be recited after or during the mitzvah. Shouldn't be recited too far in advance. Oivel means immediately before. The Gemara didn't say koidem asiyosam. The Gemara said oivel. So Tosis explained, oivel v'loi oivel the oivel. Too far in advance is no good. So the Gemara says, lulav is an exception to the rule. Once you picked it up, you're yotze already. So we always say the bracha after we pick it up. You're going to say a bracha before you pick it up. So Tosis said, that's over the over. Once you picked it up, you were yotze. So the Gemara says in Pesachim, what can you do? In the first parak of Pesachim, that was on what can you do? Lulav is an exception to the rule. We say the bracha l'achar asiyos, after we picked it up. So Tosis comes and outsmarts the Gemara. But Tosis says, no. Pick up. The Gemara says, if you hold it upside down, you're not yotze. So Tosis says they have a solution. Pick up the esrig upside down. So it's not kederach yedilos, and you're not yotze the mitzvah. And it's not over the yotze because you have everything in your hands. After you say the bracha, then you turn it over, you have to pit them up, and then you yotze the mitzvah. So the Baal Hamor, Rabbi Nizrachi Alevi, writes What a taisa, it's outsmart the Gemara. The holy Tanoim said that you say the Baruch Halacha Rasi Yosam, he doesn't see why we have to outsmart the Gemara. Do what it says in the Gemara. Do Lacha Rasi Yosam. But the Minig is like Taisus. We outsmarted the Gemara. Some Sfardim have a different practice. They'll hold the Lulav in the left hand, the Esrog in the right hand. Then they'll say the Bracha, then they'll switch hands. Because they follow the Rabbeinu Chananel, that when the Gemara says, Hafocha, you're not Yotze, Hafocha doesn't only mean if the Esrog is upside down. Not Kedera Kedei Losan. If you hold in the wrong hands, if you hold the Lulav in the left hand, the Esrog in the right hand, Rabbeinu Chananel learns that you're not Yotze B'Rievet. The Morgan Avraham quotes that Rabbeinu Chananel. Now we have it printed in the Vilna Shas on the side of the Gemara. Years ago they didn't have the Rabbeinu Chananel printed on the Gemara, so the Magen Avraham quotes. So some Sfardim have such a practice. They'll say the Bracha, Oyvel Asiyasim Hafacha, not upside down. They'll switch hands, and after saying the Bracha, then they'll switch in the correct fashion. So that's the practices that we outsmarted the Gemara. We do it like Tosis. We arrange that the Bracha should be recited Oyvel Asiyasim. We have a minig that we recite Hoshinus, all of Sukkos, and we walk around the shul with the lulav and the dalad minim. This is a zecha l'migdash. The Mishnah describes that in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to go every day of Sukkos, they did hakofis once. The Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash would walk around the Mizbeach, and on Hashanah Rabbah, they would walk around seven times. So the Gemara, there are two versions. They do the hakof every day with the dalad minim, or they just walked around? There are two versions. Our minig is that the only one who has the dalad minim walks around. Whoever doesn't have dalad minim doesn't walk around. And this is a zecha l'migdash, to remember the fact, to reminisce about the fact that in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, they used to walk around with the dalad minim. Okay, a good nyant of everybody. Maxima Toiva. When is the next year? After Sukkos. My getting is it? My schedule for the
night? I think we're scheduled for the 6th of October, about bugs and casuals.
Bugs! Okay, bugs and bunnies. Okay.
First, you can give a present in general.
The Mishnah says if you go visit someone,
you can give a present. I shot it, you also can do that.
Morgan Avram has two opinions. So he has kakasha, but the Mishnah says you're allowed to. So it's the whole literature.
And after you have to do whatever you want with Dal meaning, like, can you eat them, you cut them up?
You can eat them, that's for sure. Yeah.
But can I cut open the Esrog and like, take a seed out, try to find things, like, I can do whatever I want with them?
You might have, like, save some money. He's got a neighborhood. He wanted to save money. Yeah, yes. So he planted his own Esrog tree. His Esrog looks so ugly, unbelievable.
And when for putting down in water, like before Yontif, all my dalim are in the refrigerator. Right? So I want to break the seal, so I should put them in water for like a second before Yontif, so I can put it back on the days after. Right? That's what I should do.
Okay.
Or do I not need to put that? I have to make sure I put them in the days before.
You put them in before. So Mazir and Yontif, there are three opinions. How long is Kabbalah? 12 hours, 24 hours, or 72 hours?
So if it's 12 hours.
We passed them 24 hours.
Okay.
It was one of the big ones, 12 hours. They seriously close to the opinion.
Okay.
We passed them 24 hours.
Yeah, okay, so if you put the glue on the top, they won't share the nanon.
Put the glue on top.
Like I thought it makes a session.
Do you
share that?
No.
And what about the little pie on the top?